This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The news media landscape is altered this morning in a significant way. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This morning, Facebook becomes a news publisher. Articles from the New York Times, the National Geographic, and others will get published directly on the social network. Before, what you might find is a link that took you away from Facebook to the newspaper's site. Our Stan Alcorn has been tracking this new relationship between social media and traditional media. Stan, what does this look like?
Well, it looks kind of like Facebook, but maybe a better question is how long does it take? And there's a hint in this name, Facebook Instant Articles. So the idea is that if you're using Facebook, you're scrolling through your feed, tap on an instant article, and instead of going to NewYorkTimes.com, the idea is that it'll load instantly. And right now, the nine publishers are doing this for just a handful of articles, which weren't up when I just checked.
All right. So, but why is this happening soon, if not this moment? And why is it such a big deal, you think?
Well, why it's happening, for one, Facebook is the 300-pound gorilla of people's news habits now. The New York Times reports that nearly a sixth of its web traffic is coming from Facebook. National Geographic gets more like a quarter. So this is an example of fishing where the fish are.
Now, this has to be a catch, right? I mean, Facebook is not doing this out of adoration for news per se.
Right, absolutely not. They want high-quality content and good experience for their users, but they're also getting a lot of control. Some of the ads are going to be served up by Facebook, who's going to take a 30% cut. And the upside for news organizations is that Facebook can do that stuff well and is going to be sharing the ad revenue, the analytics, with the publishers.
All right, Stan, thank you. The fatal Amtrak derailment last evening in Philadelphia could cut off for days what is a burgeoning route. Amtrak ridership in this Northeast corridor was at a record high last year, 15 years ago. Airlines easily beat Amtrak between New York and Washington. Now it is the other way around. Checking some numbers now. Economic growth figures for Europe are in this morning. Germany, weaker than expected. France and Italy, growth stronger than expected. Eurozone as a whole, up 0.4%. The 100-share index in London is up nearly 0.6% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.3% range. The Macy's Economic Indicator. This morning, the retailer reports profits for last quarter. The company recently said it would open 4 discount stores in New York as a new way to grow sales. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more.
Other big department stores like Saks Fifth Avenue, Nordstrom, and Neiman Marcus have already established themselves in the discount game and are seeing good results from it. Retail consultant Howard Davidowitz says they knew what was up.
What is the hottest sector in apparel retailing in America? Off-price. Who is the most successful apparel retailer in the United States of America? TJ Maxx.
Davidowitz says with the middle class shrinking, it's no wonder Macy's now wants to open off-price stores. He thinks it's slow to make the move, but has the chance to stand out.
You can sell off-price, and it doesn't have to be ugly.
But retail analyst Paul Swinand at Morningstar says discount apparel may already be saturated.
In my opinion, it's sort of skating to where the puck was. I'm not so sure that off-price is going to continue its growth forever.
He says Macy's should maybe lean harder on online sales, where it's had a lot of success already. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Now, this program often features three-handed economists, on one hand, on the other hand. So it is refreshing to hear from an expert who will take a firm position on the Picasso that sold this week for the most money ever paid for a painting at auction. Joining us from time to time on this intersection of art and commerce is Blake Gopnik, critic at large for ArtNet News and a contributor to the New York Times. Good morning to you, Blake.
Good morning, David.
Now, I'm getting the sense from you already that you would not have paid $179.4 million for this Picasso.
Is my body language giving it away that much? Yes, I think this is a really minor Picasso.
But what do you think drives a price like this? It is, as I had said, the record.
Well, I mean, one of the things about this picture is is that it's a kind of pastiche of earlier Picassos. It's like Picasso doing Picasso. And what do very rich people want? They want Picasso-y looking pictures. You could say that the mega collectors are the babies of the art world. They want things that are bright and shiny and colorful and big, and that's what they got with this purchase.
But look, interest rates are low. Big investors are in search of higher returns. Maybe this will be the ticket.
I don't know. Maybe it will be. But the point is that whenever people buy art, they always pretend they're buying it for its art historical value because it matters to the culture at large. And this picture, by the standards of real Picassos, just doesn't really matter. In their publicity, Christie's was turning handsprings to make this thing seem important. They said that it was as good as Guernica from 1937.
As good as Guernica?
As good as Guernica. And that is simply absurd. There's no way this late Picasso made at a moment when everyone was tired of Picasso. There is no way that this is like one of those world-changing paintings like Guernica.
But the auctioneers, Christie's, knew that this is a moment in time where this is working, where people are willing to pay.
They actually want to set records. If you've got a few dozen billion dollars, it's actually more fun to pay too much for a picture to get the record. So you get headlines. So you get people like me and you talking about your picture. It's more fun to do that than to just buy a picture for a lousy $160 million.
I love how he calls it a picture. I would have thought work of art. Blake Gopnik is one half of the team that brings you Strictly Critical, an online video double act about the art world. There's a bold link to it at artnetnews.com. Blake is also promising he's finishing his Warhol biography.
Yeah, it's well on its way.
Good to hear it, Blake. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
And while you slept, the millennials took over. The Pew Research Center is saying that those who entered the workforce this millennium are now the largest generation in the American workforce. That's the 18 to 33 or 34-year-old crowd. 53.5 million of them just beating the Gen Xers now and leaving the boomers with just 44 million in the dust. Of course, many of the boomers are bosses, may I remind you. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.